NotreDameHub.com and the OFT Podcast proudly bring to you The Beat on Notre Dame's Beat with Philip Goff. Let's go!
So thank you. We have Ashton Pollard, who covers all things Notre Dame sports, including recruiting and more for the Blue and Gold site at On3. How's it going, Ashton?
Good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here for sure.
No, I really appreciate the time and really look forward to taking, honestly, a peek behind the curtain, you know, for what it means to be a beat writer and what it means for a beat writer to for ND. So before we dive in, where can people find you on Twitter and online?
Yeah, so my Twitter is at AshtonPollard7, so AshtonPollard7, and then online, so like you mentioned, we're part of the On3 network. We made that move over January 1st, so New Year's Day, and so all of our stuff still is housed on blueandgold.com, but we also get Notre Dame content from like our recruiting arm and from our national site. So if you go to on3.com, basically you can peruse everything. There's a sidebar with Blue and Gold, or you can just go directly to Blue and Gold. But there's Notre Dame content everywhere. Mine would primarily be on Blue and Gold itself, but yep, that's where.
Awesome. And we're, it's nice summer day today, and I heard some clinking going around. What are we working with today?
Yeah. So I'm drinking a vodka soda, but I'm trying to get rid of stuff in my fridge, and I have a lot of mint and blueberries. So I muddled those in the bottom of a vodka soda with the normal lime. So yeah, again, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Say not a bad combo.
No, not at all. Yeah, I'm going out of town in a couple of weeks, for 2 or 3 weeks. So I'm trying to clean out the fridge slowly but surely.
Yeah, I'm no judgment here. I currently have a whiskey with lemon juice, and this is Julie Goff, my mom's secret recipe of putting in maple syrup in there.
Ah, I like that. I mean,
it
yeah,
is delicious.
It makes sense because it's kind of like putting agave in, but it's like maple agave. You know, like I mean, any like syrup type thing works in a drink, I think so.
Oh yeah. Sounds good. All right, let's get into the hard hitting stuff. So I'm always curious, especially for beat writers, they're clearly passionate about sports, but I'm more curious about, you know, how old were you, or was there a time in your life where sports really began to take over your brain?
Yeah. So I would say around kind of early grade school. So 6, 7, 8, which I feel like is when people really do start to get into sports. You can watch them when you're 4, but you really don't know what's going on. Everyone does the whole play soccer, you're picking flowers in the field thing in preschool. So I did that. But yeah, I would say around 6, 7, 8 was when I really got into it. It kind of came as a result of the Notre Dame stuff, came as a result of my dad went to Notre Dame. So growing up, he would have every game on in the fall. And as I was first, second grade, I would sit down, watch it. He would explain it to me. And that's kind of how it all got started. But yeah, I would say around that age.
So I guess that answers my next question of were you a Notre Dame fan growing up?
Yes. Yeah. So, well, I can elaborate more.
Yeah, like full blown Notre Dame family, or what was the extent? What's the craziness scale of Notre Dame fandom that you experienced?
So, immediate family, it's just my dad. I'm originally from Virginia, so my mom went to UVA, but my mom's actually more of a Notre Dame fan now than a UVA fan, which is funny. But my great uncle on my dad's side, so his uncle went to Notre Dame. I don't know exactly how old he is, but like late 50s, early 60s, whatever, somewhere in that area. And that's kind of where my dad got the bug from, I would say, just because we're from Virginia. So it's not like I was growing up in Chicago where Notre Dame's everywhere. Like Notre Dame's, I mean, they are everywhere because they're Notre Dame, but you know kind of what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, my dad ended up going there. So it's kind of my immediate family. And then that branch of like my dad's uncle and his couple of kids. And then more recently, my cousin actually played hockey here and graduated a couple weeks ago. So that roped in another segment of my dad's family. So it's not like I come from a family where my dad has 5 siblings and every single one went to Notre Dame, but there are certainly several Notre Dame fans in my family, and they're all pretty big Notre Dame fans, I would say.
Yeah. I feel a little personally attacked coming from a family who probably has like 6 or 7 uncles or whoever in my family, a part of the Notre Dame, St. Mary's crew, but, yeah. But I'll let it slide.
Okay.
so the fact that you were kind of indoctrinated into it pretty early.
Yeah.
What are your kind of earliest memories, either both positive and negative, surrounding Notre Dame?
So like I said, when I was seven or eight, that's around like 2002, 2003. So as you might remember, that is not the peak of Notre Dame football by any means. So originally, I think when I was watching it with my dad, again, I'm learning the game, but you don't understand the broader context. You don't understand that Notre Dame was this powerhouse in the 80s and early 90s. They completely fell off, and now they're a bit of a national joke, kind of, for lack of a better term. So I would say when I really started to pick up on that was when they got a little better, when Brady Quinn took over, because then you start playing in those games that get all that hype, and you're also 8, 9, 10, you're starting to kind of understand what it is for there to be hype around sports and why they're important, or why that particular game is important. So yeah, I would say around the Brady Quinn era, I've told this on a billion podcasts because it's kind of part of why I loved Notre Dame, was Brady Quinn and I have the same birthday. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I would tell everyone, even if they did not ask me, that was the case. So had a little bit of a crush on Brady Quinn as an 8-year-old girl, thinking that that was so cool what he was doing, and we had the same birthday. But so does that answer your question?
It does. And I also had a big crush on Brady Quinn. So you weren't alone there.
Yeah.
And,
I figure I can say that because I'm really not the only one that falls into that boat.
Yeah. Yeah. He goes across, I think, every person who's ever looked at him or seen him throw a spiral.
It's
a crush on him.
Yes, exactly. Very spiral.
And so just moving on a little further, I saw that you swam at Penn. Did you go through any type of recruiting process as part of that?
Yes. So I was recruited the normal way that you would be, ended up at Penn. People always ask kind of why I didn't end up at Notre Dame, because starting when I was about 12-ish, that's where I wanted to go. And if people said, what's your backup? I said, there isn't one. I'm going to Notre Dame. And they were like, you should probably find a backup. Like, that's a pretty good school. But anyways.
Penn's not too bad, though.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But you understand my point. People are like, you probably shouldn't only apply to Notre Dame. That seems like a really bad idea. But I was in sixth grade and didn't really understand what college even was. So why that's kind of woven into my recruitment is basically the timeline for swimmers that are going to swim in college but aren't your borderline Olympians, which I was not. They can commit a little bit earlier, and the calendar has changed a bit since I went through the process. But when I was there for kind of like, again, your kids that can swim Division I, but they're not going to Georgia or Stanford or whatever, you tend to commit in the fall of your senior year. So you go on a couple of recruiting trips, and then they start to fill up spots like October-ish. So I went on a trip to Penn, got an offer. They basically said, you have, I think it was like 10 days or whatever to take it, or we're going to give it to somebody else, which is totally fair because they need to fill out their class. So obviously, if I was going to apply to Notre Dame, which I was still considering at the time, I was a little too slow to swim there. So it would either be preferred walk-on or not really swim at all. And I was never offered a preferred walk-on spot, but like I kind of fit that profile if I was going to end up kind of asking for one or talking with the coach or whatever. I wouldn't have found out about getting into Notre Dame even if I applied early until December, January. So it was either take the Penn spot that's essentially being handed to you, or take your chances with Notre Dame. And I decided to go to Penn. So, and I don't regret it. I loved Penn a lot. I went to a lot of Notre Dame games in college anyways. So turned out okay. But yeah, that's kind of the backstory and how I got to Penn and why I did not end up at Notre Dame, which is a question that I get all the time.
Yeah. And that, I mean, it's super interesting because even in swimming, I think people don't understand. I mean, my wife was a college swimmer. My sister-in-law was a college swimmer. Yeah. She was at College Charleston. And then my sister-in-law actually did swim at Notre Dame. So they went through, my wife was more along your vein where she was kind of later in the process, but I'm kind of curious, especially as you had to make a split decision based on numbers. So I think that probably gives you a pretty unique approach and kind of perspective on some potentially what some of these, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids are going through. Do you reflect on your own experience as you're kind of starting and writing about and talking to and expressing kind of your experience to these kids, or now?
So I guess I would say there certainly are similarities. You're picking between schools. They all have pros. They all have cons, whatever. Typically, just because I'm covering Notre Dame football, those kids are really high level recruits, and they're kind of dealing with other factors, especially now, namely NIL stuff. But they're dealing with that whole am I gonna go pro type of thing, which is a harder thing for me to understand because I was never going pro. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm dead serious and that's completely fine. Whatever. People are always like, oh, you could have. And I'm like, no, I couldn't have it. It's fine. like, absolutely not. So yes and no. I understand when they're going through 5 official visits or 12 unofficial visits, like you see some of these kids that release, like, this is my June calendar. And it's like, when in the world are you going to sleep? How are you going to like 8 schools in 4 different time zones in 3 days? So I think I can relate to that a little bit and just kind of the exhaustion and the thought process that goes into it. But again, that being said, they're dealing with, this is going to be my career, hopefully. So yeah. I have to factor that in. Whereas I was like, I want to swim in college, could be fun, but like, if it doesn't work out, whatever, I'm going to get a job, even if it does work out and I do go swim in college, if that kind of makes sense.
No, 100%. That really does. And I think it's, I mean, just the world of recruiting, we won't dive too much into it, is it's just a fascinating place in how much it's changed in the past, you know, year with NIL. And so,
go ahead. I was just going to say, that, and this goes back a little farther than a year, but I did my master's project in grad school on how recruiting has changed in the last decade, basically with Virginia as a case study, because I'm from Virginia. So I was looking at kind of the fall off of the Virginia and Virginia Tech programs, because UVA was pretty good, like late 90s, a little more in the early 2000s. Obviously, Virginia Tech was very good, late 90s, early 2000s, and both have kind of done a nosedive and are cycling through coaches like no other now. So, I looked at it and I looked at a little bit of the NIL, but also just like the social media side and the fact that it's become a 24/7 job. Like, you'd talk to high school coaches that were recruited in the early 90s and they're like, yeah, I had one phone call a week and it was fine. And I was a 5-star recruit, right? So now it's like even the 2-star recruits are being recruited 24/7 and have to be on Twitter and have to be on Instagram. And it's kind of a full-time job, both for the coaches and for the recruits now. So yeah, definitely different.
That sounds super interesting. And I would love to actually read that if you have that available.
I do. I can send it over to you. It's a little long. It's like 25 pages, but that's okay. It has some like Notre Dame hints in it because Notre Dame's been doing pretty well in Virginia too. The intro, the lead is about Jalen Elliott, actually, who's from around Richmond. So you'd probably enjoy it, but it is a little long and I don't blame you if you don't want to.
I know it's not fluff. I geek out about that type of stuff. Awesome. So obviously that sounds super interesting. And so from grad school, you made your way to On3. What was that process like, looking at On3, knowing it was this kind of new, I don't want to say new shiny toy, but just a non-traditional player when it comes to the space, because it was just new?
Yeah. So this is a funny segue, because I actually got into On3 through that master's project that I was doing, because Jamie Oakes, who runs the national news desk at On3, was a UVA beat writer forever, like the last 20 years. So I found him on Twitter and DM'd him independent of On3, DM'd him about the project and was like, hey, you've been around UVA football forever. Obviously, I've lived in Richmond and lived through the early 2000s, but to my previous point, I was not following UVA recruiting in 2001. he was. So called him and we had a conversation about my project. And then kind of at the end, he was like, hey, we're starting this company. He explained it to me. And obviously I knew Rivals 24/7. I'd been following them for a while. And so that backing of this is Shannon Terry's new company and he's been so successful, that immediately caught my interest for obvious reasons. And then I know a lot of Notre Dame fans don't love the NIL stuff because they're not too thrilled about what certain schools are doing with it. And we don't have to dive into that, but I think it's really, really interesting. And so when he brought up the kind of the big differentiating factor, and there are a couple of others, but the big one is that On3 is really diving into the NIL space. Rivals and 24/7 are not as much. That's not a knock on them, but that's just kind of how the business models differ. That definitely caught my attention. And basically we had a couple of conversations and he offered me the job on the national news desk. So I was not doing only Notre Dame to start, but, I think that was really helpful because it helped me better understand the national landscape. And once you better understand the bigger picture, it's easier to understand the smaller picture. So, I had kind of the Notre Dame fandom, so I understand what Notre Dame fans are thinking about most things, but also I have kind of the bird's eye view when they're all freaking out of like, hey, it's actually fine. Other teams are doing X, Y, and Z. You're fine, whatever. So, and I'm not saying I by no means know everything, but I think having those two experiences is kind of was a good way for me. It was good for me to get that experience before coming onto a beat, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. And did you, just based on kind of your past knowledge and past experience, and I want to call it maybe passion for Notre Dame, is that kind of what led you into the role as a Notre Dame beat writer? Or how did that shake out?
Yeah. So basically that's it. They wanted to, Blue and Gold, again, it was previously owned by Rivals, who was owned by Yahoo. When they were making the move over, I kind of, the way that the news desk works is we're all writing on all different teams, but if you're free and something about your team comes up, they'll often send it to you because you have the most context, right? Yeah. If it's breaking news and everyone's occupied, like maybe I'm writing about Oklahoma, but if I have a second and something is pressing with Marcus Freeman, they're like, Ashton knows, not knows personally, but you know what I mean? Like, it's easier for me to write about Notre Dame than it is Oklahoma, just like it's easier for the Oklahoma guy to write about Oklahoma than it is Notre Dame. So that's kind of, I ended up taking a lot of Notre Dame stuff just because that's kind of how it shook out.
Yeah.
And they liked that. I had the past passion, I guess, which Shannon Terry really likes. He wants to bring that out in his writers. So that's, yeah. So basically they just called me and they're like, we had this opening if you're interested in moving over to a beat, which did require moving too. So it was a bit of a bigger decision because I was in Chicago before, but yeah, that's kind of how it shook out. It's nothing too interesting. Just, yeah, I was a Notre Dame fan who wrote on Notre Dame and now here we are.
Yeah. How's the transition been to South Bend?
Good. I actually really like it. And I'd been before, obviously, but it's very different to come on a Saturday in the fall and live here. Those are two very different things. So I would say I went to school in Philadelphia and then I lived in DC for 2 years and I lived in Chicago for 2 years. So basically since I was 18, I've lived in massive cities and I like massive cities, but they're a little bit overwhelming at times. So I think I kind of like the change of pace a bit. I don't know that I want to live in South Bend, Indiana forever, but I think that the transition has been smoother just because I was kind of ready for a change away from a really big city after 8 years in one and just all of the, yeah, the, I don't, you know, kind of what I mean. They never, like, cities don't sleep really. And it's kind of stressful at times. So yeah, it's been good. I had to buy a car. That was a whole experience. I had no idea how to buy a car. I called my dad and I was like, what do I do? And he's like, you just buy the car. I was like, no. Like, what? No. So that was a whole thing. I actually just got my license plate today. I bought the car in March. So shout out Indiana DMV for that whole scenario. But yeah, it's been fun. That was more than you probably wanted as an answer to that question. But
no, I have a soft spot in my heart for South Bend. So I lived there. I did the ACE program through Notre Dame. Okay. So I actually lived in South Bend for 3 summers in a row. And my kind of claim to fame for summers in South Bend is no matter where you go to go grab drinks, whenever you close out your tab, it's $12, which is quite a big difference than the big cities. It's literally living city rich.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And like my apartment is, I pay less and it's like 3 times as big as my Chicago apartment. People are like, oh, that's huge. And I'm like, all my friends lived in cities because we all went to college together. Now they're in cities. And I'm like, yeah, this is what happens when you don't live in Manhattan, apparently. who knew? So nothing against Manhattan. It's fine. But you know.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a little bit different style of life. And it probably helps that it's Notre Dame is so encapsulated in the town that you're living in. And I'm kind of curious if you ever, you know, especially being, you know, South Bend is just synonymous with Notre Dame. And now that you're, you know, a face of who writes for Notre Dame, do you ever get people coming up to you ever asking you for scoops, for tips, or just having conversations out of nowhere?
Not a ton, but it has happened. I think the first time it happened, actually, so it was 2 weeks before I moved here and I was actually over here to watch my cousin who played hockey to watch his like senior day game. And I was with my aunt and uncle and my grandmother came out from Virginia and I was walking and some guy stopped me and was like, are you Ashton? And I was like, yeah. And like that had never happened. So I didn't even process like what was happening. And my grandmother's standing there and she's like, what in the world is going on? And he's like, oh, I saw you on the YouTube show. And I was like, oh no, I don't want to be noticed. So I like had a nice conversation. Like he was very nice. He was probably around my age, like 25-ish. He was very nice. But from that point on, I was like, yeah, I'm not in Chicago anymore or DC or Philadelphia, where I was anonymous for 8 years. Yeah. But I've never gotten asked for scoop or information. It's just been people that are like, oh, hey, like, how are you? Whatever. And then it's a quick whatever. But it does kind of make you like, when you go out, you're like, I should probably look not homeless all the time.
Which can be hard.
It can.
Yeah. Does your family having that Notre Dame, do they ever try to pry scoops out of you or information out of you?
They're pretty good about not. My mom is a Notre Dame fan, but she's kind of, I don't want to like knock her or anything. She's not reading Notre Dame blogs all day. She'll read what I write, but like my dad will like sit at work and like read Notre Dame stuff. So he generally kind of knows what's going on, and I would say doesn't really ever ask for scoop, but what he will do is he'll ask after the fact. Like I get a lot of, cause Notre Dame's had a lot of commitments recently. I get a lot of, so what do you think of this kid? So what do you think of this? Whatever. And like at that point, it's a little more casual, I guess, than the article you're writing online. Cause again, he will read that, but then not that he's like, so what's the real story? But like, you know, kind of what I mean? It's like when you're having a conversation about it, he's able to ask more questions and he gets more kind of info or like better, longer explanations than the typical just like commitment story we would write or whatever.
No, definitely. And just kind of taking into kind of some of the articles and some of the work that you're going in, you know, I'd love for people to understand. I think people have an idea of what goes into being, you know, a beat writer and someone who's virtually on call at all hours of the day, but uh-huh. You know, I'd love to hear it from you kind of twofold, just kind of what maybe, I don't want to say like a typical day, but maybe what people would be most surprised to learn about your experience as a beat writer.
Yeah. So we kind of talked about this before we hopped on, but I think I'll preface it with this. Our jobs as sports writers, no one is dying. Like no one is, you're not a surgeon. You're not somebody who has to sign off on someone's house and they're going to be homeless if you don't sign. Like nobody's life is reliant on sports journalists. And I'm well aware of that. That being said, there's also this perception that sports journalists just sit and watch TV all day and they just get to watch sports and like everything's glamorous and their hobby is your job and it's fantastic. And I love my job. I don't want to say that my job's not fantastic, but I think that is kind of a common misconception and people don't really get like what they see the game and then they see the piece. They don't really know what happens in between. And to be fair, I mean, I didn't either. I was a sports fan my whole life and I was not in sports media until really a year ago, formally as a profession, but even 2 years ago as a graduate student. So that's, I think, kind of one of the misperceptions. I think also, and this isn't necessarily like a misperception or anything, but just like the explanation of kind of what goes into writing an article. Yeah. So typically, I mean, after games, the press conferences, which people typically tend to see, but just like the day-to-day. So now when there's not a ton going on with the team is here, they're doing summer workouts, but it's not fall camp and it's not open to the media. A lot of largely, I would say like depth chart decisions aren't really being made based on this one lift on June 9th. So now what it is it's a lot of coming up with kind of your own story ideas, which is also more difficult than one might think. What I tend to do, and I think what helps me as a Notre Dame fan is like, what do I want to know about the team, right? Because odds are if I don't know it, someone else doesn't know it. And I do not know everything. And I'm not like saying that, but like if I have no idea about a topic at all, someone else probably has the same question, which is I think a nice, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a nice thing about being a fan maybe is you have like, you know, the pulse of the fan base, and not that my coworkers don't, they're fantastic, yeah. But, yeah, so there's that. It's like coming up with your own story ideas and then you have to find ways to source them often. News articles typically aren't sourced because if X commits to Notre Dame, like, I mean, you can talk to the kid, but you know what I mean? It's like, you can Google, you can find stuff out about him online. But yeah, finding sources and just like kind of exhausting those sources. So what I learned about journalism school is if you want to write an article on Ian Book, you probably want to talk to Ian Book. You probably want to talk to Ian Book's coach. But what's arguably more fun and more informative is like talking to Ian Book's parents, talking to his siblings, talking to his friends, because that's when you get like a better look at the person, especially if you're writing like a featurey type thing. So I think that is also kind of a something that people don't fully get about journalism, is just like the extent that you have to go to exhaust sources to really dive into the story. And again, that's not always possible. Sometimes you're on a quick deadline and you just gotta turn it around and you have one source and fine. But yeah, that's kind of, those are kind of the things that I get the most questions about.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's really interesting because I feel like the perception from a lot of people who probably read a story, again, like you mentioned, like about Ian Book, they're like, oh, great. Well, she talked to Ian Book and was able to get that story out, where so many of the details and small layers and thought that go into it was your own digging sources.
Yeah.
Research.
And sometimes you don't even use a source. Like they could be a fine source, but maybe you don't have enough room to add in the other topic that they brought up or whatever. Maybe you spin that off into another story, but maybe you don't. Like there are a lot of things that you do that don't ultimately get published. And that happens with like writing articles during games. Like beat writers will write multiple versions for if Notre Dame wins, if Notre Dame loses, if Notre Dame gets blown out, because you want to be close to first, if not first, obviously accurate too, but you want to get it out there before other people. And if you are starting the moment the game ends, you are not going to get it out first. So yeah, a lot of unused words that I've written in my lifetime, which is fine, but
yeah, I can only imagine. I know we only got a couple more minutes left because, you know, you got to get going here pretty quickly, but just a couple quick hitters, followed by kind of one last thought piece. So the first one is, if you could cover any college football team other than Notre Dame, who would it be?
Okay. This might make people mad. So I have an interest in the SEC. I think the SEC, like culturally, is really cool. I know a lot of Notre Dame fans don't love the SEC, but I would love to go cover like Alabama. Like I think that would be really cool. And just see, because I mean, like him or hate him, Nick Saban is a very good football coach. And anybody sane is not going to disagree with that statement. So like going to see like how he runs a program. I love Lane Kiffin. That is a thing on Twitter. Yes. I think he is hilarious. I would love to go cover Ole Miss. Like I think that going to an SEC program and just kind of seeing how they do it, I think I probably ultimately would still want to end up back in the Midwest, because I think Midwest football is the most fun, but just that's just like a totally different world. And I think it could be fun. So I would say Alabama or Ole Miss probably.
I'm fully on board with both of those. Next little quick hitter. So 21-year-old Ashton Pollard is in college and you suddenly have the opportunity to sign an NIL deal. Who are you signing with?
Ooh, that's hard.
No restrictions.
No restrictions. Well, so there is a restriction in NIL on alcohol, and I love wine. So I would really want to sign a wine one, but I feel like that's not allowed. some food one, maybe. I love these like Cane's and Chick-fil-A ones. Those are awesome. I love those places. I would say probably one of those. I'm not really too into cars. Like it'd be nice to have a car, but like CJ Stroud just got a Bentley. Like that, I'm not like dying to get a car, but if I were, I would love to have like a Jeep Cherokee, Grand Cherokee. So maybe Jeep. That could be more helpful than like Canes, but I don't know. There are a couple answers for you.
Yeah. There's a, there's an upcoming, you know, commitment coming up here in the next little bit, which I feel like with his last name, he could get some potential, you know, lucrative deals here, but we're not going to, not going to talk too much on that. So last question before, before I let you go here. So, I think this helps being a traditional Notre Dame fan growing up, but if you could have any unfiltered discussion with any player, coach, or really about any topic about Notre Dame football, completely off the record, what would that be?
Do they have to be alive?
No.
Newt Rockne.
Ooh, just digging into everything.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he fascinates me. He's kind of the father of the forward pass, which is kind of important to this whole operation. I just think it was really cool that he basically took this tiny school in Northern Indiana, made it a national powerhouse by going all over the country. Like that's like, it's pretty easy to get to LA from South Bend now. That's not easy in 1920, whatever. Like there was a lot of thought put into that. We're going to make this a national program. We're going to go play USC. We're going to go play in Yankee Stadium. So I think that he was kind of ahead of his time, and we don't have to go into all of the history, but that's partially kind of because they got boxed out of the Big Ten, but that's a whole other thing. Yeah, I would love to know about that and just like pick his brain. I guess someone that is alive, it would be Brady Quinn, just because I kind of consider him the person that sparked my interest in this. And I probably would have ultimately gotten involved, like would have been a fan anyways, just because of my family. But I think he's kind of the one when you say, Ashton, who's your favorite Notre Dame player of all time? It's Brady Quinn, like without a doubt. So.
And Brady, I know you're listening. So next year we're going to have a joint birthday party with you and Ashton. So you can fund it, Brady. So Ashton, thanks again. This has been wonderful.
You.
You provided just some great information. I'm excited to kind of read more of your stuff. So can you just tell everybody one more time where they can find you?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm on Twitter at AshtonPollard7 and then everything on blueandgold.com. And if you want to go a little more national, head to on3.com and you can read all of that as well. So yeah, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Awesome. Thanks. Have a great night.
You too.